top diplomats from around the world discuss Syria again. The U.S. and its allies say Russia and China are blocking action to stop the bloodshed. Moscow says the solution they're advocating is a recipe for more bloodshed. Welcome to another edition of News Analysis. Joining me now, live from London, is political analyst Sukhat Chandan to share his views with us. Thank you very much for being with us. Also with us on the line from Wisconsin is from the Muslim Jewish Christian Alliance, Dr. Kevin Barrett, and Director of the Center for Research and on Globalization, Professor Michel Chosudovsky, joining us via Skype from Montreal. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for being with us. My first question I'd like to put to our guest in London, Mr. Chandan. Where did Kofi Annan's meeting, do you think, with Assad lead to? Now, this was something that Sergei Lavrov today said he's hoping will be helping resolve the situation. What do you think?
I think I'm going to start with Palestine, and I make no apologies starting with Palestine, because I remember just a few years ago, one of the better Western-based white liberal radicals said Palestine was still the issue. And today, what we've seen in the last several days is now dozens of Palestinians massacred by the Zionist state. And where has all the focus been? The Zionist state, now in the political situation that we've been in, the so-called Arab Spring, can get away with massacres when just over a year ago it couldn't. And what has happened is that empire has realized, especially since the Hezbollah victory against the Zionist state in 2006, that they need to put in place certain political mechanisms, lies and manipulation that can reverse the trend. And the trend up to that point was victories of the steadfast bloc, of the resistance axis of mainly Iran, Syria, Hezbollah and the Palestinian resistance. So after the victory of Hezbollah in 2006, it's quite obvious that West, with the allies in the region, put in place certain political conspiracy for this Arab Spring to come about. So instead of being focused on the massacres that the Zionist state is committing in the last few days and nearly on a weekly basis, even the Palestine Solidarity Movement and many people who up to just yesterday aspired for the freedom of the Arab countries against Zionism and imperialism are today now, instead of focusing on the Zionist state, are focusing on regimes like Gaddafi and Assad. So is Palestine still the issue? It's clearly not. What is now the issue is Western regime change facilitated by the so-called Arab Spring.
Right, Mr. Chandan, they're giving us a broader perspective of things. I'd just like to bring in Dr. Kevin Barrett here on this as well. Now, Dr. Barrett, was what I guess in London was implicating there was how the United Nations is getting involved in international issues. And we saw Sergei Lavrov say in his comments today that were made just hours back that it's important that we understand the principles and the charter of the United Nations. It can't be that the viewpoint of just one member or several member states prevailed. So basically, when there is this kind of criticism, when we're not seeing maybe UN action or that kind of pressure on what's happening now, Israel targeting the Gaza Strip, at the same time that this pressure is so much increasing on President Assad in Syria, are these members in a position to give the Assad regime the proper solution?
Well, that's a very good question. It does seem that Russian and Chinese support is still there for the Syrian government, and that side of world public opinion and world power wants to resolve things peacefully in Syria, and I do think that's the right approach. I think it's too bad that the Western governments, led by the U.S., which is dominated by the Zionists, have managed to hijack world public opinion to a certain extent, and even a certain segment of public opinion in the Arab and Muslim worlds, by diverting them through this Arab Spring rhetoric to basically disguise a whole program of destabilization that's being implemented to essentially turn the region into a series of Bantustans that can easily be controlled by the U.S. Zionist empire. And I do hope, though, that they've realized that they're kind of at the end of the road there, and that future regime change in the Arab world really needs to happen at the other end of the Arab world, namely in the Gulf states like Saudi Arabia and, dare I say, Qatar, the big U.S. aircraft carrier over there in the Gulf. Saudi Arabia is the country that, when it becomes democratic, the region will genuinely change for the better.
Well, I'd like to bring in Professor Michel Chuzudovsky here, who's with us from Montreal. Now, Professor, focusing back now on the situation in Syria, I was referring to Kofi Annan's mission, and he's been saying that he wants everybody to gather around the table through a political process. He wants to ensure humanitarian access is open, that the killing of civilians is stopped. Now, that has clearly not happened yet. Why do you think it hasn't happened?
Well, it hasn't happened because these civilian casualties are the result of actions undertaken by terrorist organizations linked to Al-Qaeda. And these terrorist organizations are also supported by foreign forces. There's ample evidence from official statements, from the Arab League Observer Mission, from the Israeli media, that there are terrorist organizations involved in killing civilians, and this, in a very cynical mode, provides the justification for the so-called international community to say, to blame Bashar al-Assad, when in fact these civilian casualties were ordered by foreign forces. It is what is called in intelligence parlance, and I quote from the Pentagon, a mass civilian casualty event which, quote, creates a useful wave of indignation, unquote. This last wave of killing is the result of armed gunmen, terrorists, mercenaries, and in a very casual way, it is then blamed on the Syrian government. I'm not suggesting that the Syrian government does not bear responsibility in this matter, but we must understand what are the underlying causes of this so-called protest movement. We have special forces from Qatar, from Britain, from the United States, from France on the ground, and I quote from British military sources, the MI6, CIA, SAS, and what are they doing? They're training members of the Free Syrian Army. So that, in effect, what we have, if we want to resolve this crisis, we have to start perhaps by a little bit of regime change in the United States of America. Secretary Clinton, just a couple of weeks ago, acknowledged in a very candid statement, which was on the State Department website, to the effect, this was in an interview, that Al-Qaeda and other organizations on our terror list, that of the United States, are supporting the opposition. Now, if the United States is supporting the opposition, that means that it is also supporting an opposition which is integrated by terrorist organizations which are on the U.S. list, and this is acknowledged candidly in a speech in an interview by
Hillary Clinton. What you're saying, Professor, is basically at the same time that the United Nations Security Council is discussing some way to intervene in the case of Libya, that intervention has already happened. I'd just like to go back to London, our guest there. Mr. Chandan, we hearing the Syrian envoy in Russia make the same claims. He said that the West is calling, in his words, terrorists, the opposition and the revolutionaries, that these terrorists, in his words, are being supported and financed by the West. So basically, when we look at the way the media is covering this, we're hearing, for instance, of pro-Assad and anti-Assad militia groups fighting, for instance, in Homs, where the severe casualties we're hearing of are happening. So who do you think these groups are? Are they pro-Assad and anti-Assad militia? Are they just Al-Qaeda? Are they the Syrian government and army against the opposition and revolutionaries? What do you think?
I think the array of political forces in the opposition that wants regime change in Syria, they're not new political forces in Syria. They've been there for many decades, if not generations. Basically, you know, in the region, you have two sides of the struggle. On the one hand, you have the Western-backed monarchies and regimes, and the Western agenda has always been to divide the Arabs, which they've done more or less successfully, and to ensure that the Arabs are divided along sectarian lines. And that's exactly what's happening today. And that the Arab struggle is delinked and disconnected and severed from the Palestinian revolutionary struggle as well. And that's what they've achieved in Syria. And absolutely, China and Russia are the only guarantors, and they're not full guarantors. But at the moment, relatively to the historical place that we're in, Russia and China are the only guarantors to stopping the war machine off the West for regime change. Without Russia and China, there would be war, increased and intensified war on Syria. But I remember sitting in Tripoli in Libya towards the second half of the summer last year, and it seemed NATO were in great disarray, that the NATO-backed rebels were getting nowhere unless NATO was bombing a path of them, and that the Jamhuria state looked like it could actually survive the NATO aggression. The point I'd like to make is that although it seems that the Syrian regime may have survived this battle that it's been in for the last year, make no mistakes, quoting a famous English rock band, these are war pigs that we're dealing with in the West, and they will not leave Syria alone. They will come for Syria, they will come for Hezbollah, and they will come for their big prize in the region, which is Iran. And our side have to really prepare ourselves, not only people in the region, but the solidarity movements as well, which so far have been really failing in their job of defending the region.
I'd just like to bring in Dr. Barrett here again. Dr. Barrett, at the UN Security Council meeting in New York, Western foreign ministers demanded that China and Russia stop blocking UN action in Syria. What do you think is basically the reason for Russia and China's concerns that they refuse the UN's intervention in Syria? Now, we had their comments being made by our guests about the efforts for regime change, the efforts for military intervention. Is that what the UN is actually aiming at, and is that why Russia is concerned?
Well, yes, the UN has been largely a tool of the U.S. and its allies since it was formed, and we certainly saw that when Israel was created. And today, Russia and China are the forces of stability. They are the forces of the future that stand to dominate the Eurasian continent. If the North American entity doesn't grab the center of the grand chessboard that Brzezinski talks about. So clearly, the U.S. and its allies are essentially global imperialist aggressors who are trying to maintain their imperial positions. And China, Russia, Iran, and some other countries in the region are beginning to realize that their future lies in stability and trade amongst themselves and keeping these imperialists under control. So I think that's the larger context of this struggle for Syria. And I do wish that my Muslim brothers and sisters around the world would wake up and realize that this sectarian card that the imperialists are playing is one that is only to our disadvantage and our detriment. The one thing that we as Muslims need is solidarity in resisting this kind of imperialism and working with the forces for peace and stability around the world. And in this case, I think that means trying to work things out peacefully in Syria rather than allowing the American terrorists to destabilize it.
So basically that brings the next question on, and I'd like to put that question to Mr. Chodorowski in Montreal. Professor, when we are speaking about the Russian initiative, also supported by China, we're hearing of a national dialogue without preconditions, non-interference. Do you think that that is going to be viable, that that's possible right now? Because up until now, Kofi Annan has also been speaking of a political process. It's not been helping on the ground there. So basically, how viable is the Russian initiative, and why do you think the rest of the Security Council members were not for it, and they said it was not sufficient?
Well, what I think is important is that Russia and China are confronting the Western military alliance in the Security Council, exercising their veto, and they are revealing what the mainstream media is not revealing. They're revealing the fact that this is not a protest movement. It is an insurgency supported by foreign powers. Mind you, everything is couched in the language of diplomacy, because if you start examining what's actually happening on the ground, this is already a war against the sovereign state, where the representatives of NATO are on the ground. Special forces training the rebels from Britain and France. Turkish operatives. Several NATO countries are already involved in fighting government forces through these proxy mercenaries which are, again, they are paramilitaries paid and financed by the Western Military Alliance. A few months ago, there was a report that NATO was actually recruiting mercenaries to wage their wars. In fact, they said that these were Islamic fighters. They were recruiting them, they were training them, and this was done in a program implemented by NATO headquarters in Brussels with the Turkish military. And there have been various other initiatives, some of which are now very much in the open, such as the presence of Qatari special forces. But as I mentioned, there are other special forces from the mainstay of the Western Military Alliance, including Britain,
right.
France, and of course Israel as well. So that we are dealing with a war, we're dealing with a military agenda. Syria is on the roadmap. This war has been prepared for years and years and years. What they want is to have to intervene in Syria in the form of a so-called responsibility to protect, a humanitarian mandate. We have to put this operation in context, because it's very much linked to previous intents on the part of the Western Military Alliance and Israel directed against Syria. And I'm talking about the 2006 war against Lebanon.
Back to London now, I guess there. When Professor Chodorkowski in Montreal is speaking about a major plan and Syria being part of that plan for military intervention in Syria. Now, Mr. Chandan, how do you see the role of the likes of Saudi Arabia and Qatar in Syria? Now, of course, these two countries have been leading, in their own words, the diplomatic effort, the political effort to solve the crisis in Syria. They say they support people's demands there. But the question is, are they in a position to support popular demands in Syria and at the same time suppress the demands in their own countries and in neighboring Bahrain and Yemen?
Indeed, I mean, the role of Saudi Arabia and Qatar is nothing new. Its role is to help and be a watchdog and to be a facilitator. Obviously, Qatar is holding the biggest U.S. military base in the region, which is CENTCOM. And Saudi Arabia, when Saudi Arabia falls, everything will unravel in the region and in the Muslim community, i.e. that it will actually move forward towards liberation against that which is holding us back, which is imperialism's alliance with the Saudi regime. A good friend of mine, Ramzi Barood, is a Palestinian writer, said recently that the mainstream media have been clueless and complicit in the massacres in Palestine. I don't think it's just them. It's actually been who's actually more clueless, complicit in the media is Al Jazeera, which is the voice of the Qatari monarchy. So this is the role that these states are playing in Syria and in the region generally.
And I'd like to have Dr. Barrett's view on this as well. The Syrian information minister, Dr. Barrett, has accused Qatar and Saudi Arabia of funding, in his words, the terrorists. How valid do you find these accusations?
Well, it's clear that Al Jazeera is acting as a propaganda tool of the anti-Bashar al-Assad forces in Syria. And Saudi Arabia has been on and off, mostly on, a pure tool of the American Zionist forces in the region. I have to agree that in the big regime change that the Middle East really needs is the democratization of Saudi Arabia. And I believe that there's this effort to orchestrate the Arab Spring and turn it away from that. Mm-hmm. And that's why we've seen the world's attention directed to these sort of manufactured insurgencies to some extent in Libya and even more so in Syria. I think they're trying to essentially recolonize the region, keep it in the hands of the West, and by framing it as a struggle for democracy in Syria, when in fact the real problem is the Gulf states, which are using oil to prop up the petrodollar with this world system of Riba currency, usury. They're trying to build a world empire out of yours.
If I may, I'm sorry for jumping in. We're running out of time, and I'd just like to have the concluding remarks by Dr. Chodorkovsky. Professor, if you could just tell us in less than a minute, with the differences that we're seeing at the international arena, Russia and China one side, the rest on the other, are these differences going to be bridged, and how is this going to affect Syria?
Well, that's a very important question. It has to do with Eurasian geopolitics. I'd like to come back on what you mentioned earlier, the statement by Minister of Information, Dr. Adnan Mahmoud. I think this is a very important statement because it first of all, it pinpoints very clearly, and they've been very careful in the past not to, you know, to remain within the realm of polite diplomacy, but Qatar and Saudi Arabia are identified, and also the media, the news channels, Al Jazeera and Al Arabiya, are, and they say, accomplices in these heinous crimes. I believe that the position of the Minister of Information regarding these crimes is documented to the extent that we know that these are terrorist organizations which are supported by Western powers as well as by Saudi Arabia and Qatar.
Okay, thank you very much, Professor Michel Chodorkovsky, Director of the Center for Research on Globalization, joining us there via Skype from Montreal. Thank you very much. A big thank you to our guest in London, political analyst Mr. Sukant Chandan, and also our guest joining us on the line from Wisconsin with the Muslim Jewish Christian Alliance, Dr. Kevin Barrett. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for being with us. We've run out of time for this edition of News Analysis from me, Homa Lezgi, and the rest of the team. It's goodbye.